I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And you're listening to Mind the Gap. Mind the Gap is a podcast dedicated to discovering the minds behind the people bringing science to society. From challenges to opportunities, we uncover the impact of research on policy, community, and ultimately, you. So sit back, relax, and please, mind the gap. So today we are here with Sebastian Green from Pulse.
Hey, everyone.
All right, Sebastian, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Sebastian, I go by Seb, though, so if you run into me on the street, you can call me Seb.
Okay.
I run Pulse, which is the health innovation hub based out of Dalhousie, but I work with students around Nova Scotia, especially those who are eager to solve big problems in big ways. We do that through the lens of innovation and entrepreneurship.
Okay, that sounds very cool.
It is really cool. It's something I'm very passionate about.
Okay, so. I'm really excited to hear more about it because I don't know a lot about Pulse, so it'll be cool to learn more about it.
Yeah.
But before we get into the episode, we have a segment that we like to do. So it's a would you rather question, research
Amazing.
Question edition. These are research questions that have been done in the past. Surprisingly. So, would you rather study whether or not cabbies or taxi drivers have bigger brains or the propulsion parameters of penguin poop?
Oh, you know, as passionate as I am about penguin poop, I might have to go with the taxi driver brains.
Yeah. So this one's a really cool one. So this is looking at London's black cab drivers, and they wanted to see if they had bigger memory regions for like navigational areas around London. Mm. And so their study was called Navigation-Related Structural Change in the Hippocampi of Taxi Drivers, and they discovered that cabbies had physically larger posterior hippocampi, the area of the brain responsible for spatial memory.
Wow.
So
I'm not surprised,
cool.
too. I have heard, I've been there a few times, and I have heard that to pass the taxi driver test in the UK especially, they have to memorize all of the roads, basically the map, of which there's something like 30,000 roads or something like that. So I wouldn't be surprised. All that recall they must have to do for passengers.
I definitely think I would not pass that test. I am very directionally challenged. And even this morning, one of my friends was asking me about my favorite spots outdoors to go rock climbing. And I was thinking, and I was like, I have no ability to tell you where these places are. Like, I'm a happy passenger princess who just lets other people drive me. So, you know what?
I'm the exact opposite. If I'm in the passenger seat, it drives me a little nuts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? Can't relate.
I'm the driver. Yeah.
I was also asked recently about if you could pay for two professional services for the rest of your life and just have them permanently, what would they be? And one of them was definitely professional chauffeur for me. So not a big driver.
You could save a lot of time.
Yeah.
You could save a lot of time.
I think so. And it would be nice to think like, oh, I could go anywhere. Like, what if I just asked my chauffeur to drive me to the other side of Canada? Like, would they say no? I don't know.
If they're your private chauffeur, would they be able to say no?
Yeah. In case you're curious about the propulsion parameters of penguin poo, this was a paper called Pressures Produced When Penguins Poo, Calculations on Avian Defecation. And so let me see.
I'm happy someone's researching this.
This
is very important for the world, I feel.
Yeah. So this research included the thickness of and distance covered by fecal matter, and the researchers were able to calculate that the birds employed pressures of up to 60 kilopascals to eject their bodily waste.
My God.
So yeah, anyways, that's
groundbreaking science happens at all levels.
I know. Yeah. I do really like reading these because usually when I read the description, I'm like, that's really cool, but the titles are just like flashy, trying to catch my attention. So back to the actual episode, we are here to talk a little bit about what you do in relation to Pulse. So before we get into what Pulse is, is. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure, yeah. I would say there's less penguin poop in my background. I'm not going to say none, because you never know what might happen.
Yeah.
I come to this, what we call the ecosystem, the entrepreneurship innovation ecosystem, mm-hmm. Kind of from a different route. I've always been interested in building things. So growing up, I was always interested in how things fit together and how you might construct something. So architecture was actually a big passion for me. It was something that I wanted to pursue once I got out of high school. To do that, you need an undergrad degree. Mm-hmm. So I actually pursued science as that, and then completed it with a architectural engineering course after that.
Okay.
But how I got into this space of startups and business and health, mm-hmm. even, is a pretty long route. My first job out of high school was actually for a tech startup. It was based in Halifax, and we did things with lasers. It was really cool, high edge, cutting edge tech. We were the first ones east of Toronto to sort of do what we were doing. So sort of living in that emerging space was really interesting for me. And I was very comfortable in a small business environment. I think I was employee number 4 or something like that.
Okay.
We grew to 10 while I was there. So just seeing the growth and projection of business from the inside out was pretty interesting to me. From that, I actually left that and struck out on my own for a minute. And this was before I really knew about startups or all the support systems out there for entrepreneurs or people who have these really cool ideas. And I ran my own business for a while and, you know, was reasonably successful for myself at that, to do something incredibly cool. And I was still in the construction technology sort of space. And it really occurred to me that something that I wanted to do with my life was to help people, creative people especially, who are sort of struggling with all the things I was struggling with, who had the questions I had. And I wanted to help others answer those questions. So I started looking around for other people who were like me, in the same boat as me, trying to muddle my way through this whole entrepreneurship thing, of which there's, you know, thousands of resources now. But in the early days, it was bleak times before. And through that, I sort of discovered this ecosystem that exists on the East Coast for entrepreneurship and innovation. So I moved over to the service support side, and especially in tech, and helped others sort of navigate their way through this very muddy process of trying to start a business or trying to access resources to start. So I worked all over the place, from industry associations for tech, helping individuals across the province and across Atlantic. And eventually I moved up to New Glasgow and I started a innovation hub. Mm. And innovation was sort of new to me at the time, but I sort of said, hey, you know, I can do this. I'm good at corralling people together and, you know, sharing some really cool ideas between us to bring it through to impact. So I did that for a few years, which was super impactful. The incubator that I started up there still exists today. Mm. And through I always say I met someone and they dragged me back to Halifax over time. First we moved to Truro, since it was sort of a halfway point for us, and then eventually all the way back to Halifax. And still wanted to remain very much in the incubator accelerator space. Mm-hmm. And that's when I landed at Dalhousie, actually. Over in the Faculty of Engineering, doing something very similar to what I do now in the faculties of health, medicine, and dentistry.
Okay.
And that's how I came across Pulse, or got pulled in by suction to Pulse to sort of help out and build something from the ground up, which is sort of what I've dedicated most of my life to.
Okay, that's really cool. I don't know if I really
had
any...
We call it eclectic.
Yeah, eclectic. That's a good word for it. I was going to say, I don't know if I had any expectations of what your journey was like, but just part of being on this podcast, I shouldn't have any expectations, because any of our guests, everyone just has such a diverse background.
Hugely diverse,
and
right?
And it's really cool. It's like, you never know what's going to set off your next path into something
that's
completely
right.
different. So,
and for your listeners, that's important for them to keep in mind. I think important for us to keep in mind too, as even as my career path navigates itself forward, it's always changing.
I know. I think there's something very nice about not knowing what you want to do. Like, I think it's good to have a general idea so you stay motivated, but me and our co-host Teresa always talk about just keeping as many doors open as possible, because I don't know. I think especially academics are interested in so many broad fields.
You have to be curious to be in this field.
Exactly.
Right?
And so, I mean, there's probably so much fun and like creativity and curiosity just in all the people that you met along the way until where you are now.
That's right.
So I'm kind of envious. It sounds like a lot of fun. Honestly.
It is a lot of fun. And actually my partner, when she talks about what I do, it's very hard to explain sort of what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
But she has always told me that when one door closes for me, 16 more open somehow. And it's just the nature of the space and being curious, I think.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's just always cool to see like the ideas that come out and the people behind the work and the what drives the passion behind each project and everything.
Oh, yes.
It's very cool. And I am somebody who is very disconnected from the business world, so I definitely have a lot to learn in that regard.
We're here to talk about it. We're here to talk about it. It's nothing scary and it's nothing that anyone can't overcome is what I would say.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings me nicely into my next question, which is what is Pulse?
Yeah, great question. Not everyone knows the answer to that. even I, you know, Pulse is relatively new. So we're still, I think, even defining our limits and our boundaries ourselves currently.
Mm-hmm.
But Pulse is a innovation hub for young entrepreneurs who are exploring this ecosystem of innovation and entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for those who are interested in making change or bringing an idea through to impact. So really what we do is we support two processes. One is innovation. It's a process. One is entrepreneurship, which is also a process.
Mm.
Innovation is the process of bringing an idea, a new idea, through to impact, hopefully new impact.
Yeah.
And entrepreneurship is this process of developing and running a business, a new business.
Okay. Yeah. It's always good to have good definitions for what you're doing.
Context is key,
because I think that I've heard the words innovation and entrepreneurship a lot in my life and never really stopped to think like what is the difference between the two.
Yeah.
So
and you know, I think we live in a time too where it those two words in particular are used quite often in different ways and sometimes as buzzwords to, you know, make it look a little nice, make it look a little cool or something like that for participants in programs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But really at the core, that's sort of our definition of it and where we want to work.
Yeah.
So we have a whole host of, you know, sort of programs or experiential opportunities for young innovators, so post-secondary students and things like that across Nova Scotia to explore this for the first time. You know, it's not everyone comes from this background. Not everyone understands businesses or entrepreneurship or innovation or change-making or problem-solving.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to start somewhere. Yeah. So hopefully Pulse is the place that you start.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just happy to have moved to Halifax and discovered this because, I had somebody come into one of my classes and talk a little bit about DAL Innovates. And in their talk, they talked about how typically it's like older generations who start thinking about business ideas because they get stuck in like the monotony of their life and they want to do something different. And so I never really thought about what I could do being as young as I am,
yes,
you know?
Yep, yep.
So knowing that these programs exist, that I can look into it and not already be established.
That's right.
Is really
a place
cool.
to explore is perfect. Another great note on that you touched on just briefly. You may be familiar with the term of wealth inequality.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurship is very based on risk.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have some risk capital to be able to start a business.
Yes.
If you have to leave a job, you have to make sacrifices at home, you have to have savings, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also a risk inequality. So particular students might be at a disadvantage to be able to take on that risk. Older adults who are on retirement income or something like that are also at that disadvantage. Women and racialized groups, same barriers affect those folks as well. So that's where I like to sort of make some headway or provide some support is to provide those resources so that you can take on that risk because what the world needs is more change makers, is more people tackling problems and creating new ideas to solve all the things that affect us.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And a lot of conferences. I say a lot as if I've been to many, but
the one conference,
the one conference that, yeah, that I've been, yeah, to talked a lot about the fact that, you know, a lot of solutions for problems is going to be for the next generation. But
that's right.
It's true. Like, it's not wrong, but you can't just be like, all right, let's just pass it off and hope they'll be fine, you know?
Pass the baton.
So, like, the work that you do seems to really, like, target the people who need the help to then help make that change so that, you know, when I'm not saying the entire responsibility of the entire world is being put on, you know, the new generation or anything, but
eventually it will be.
Yeah, eventually it is. And so I think having the support along the way is needed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm glad that you saw that in your career path, and so that we have programs that exist today
to help that. Yeah, yeah. I would say too, just on that point, that we use innovation and entrepreneurship as a vehicle to build and teach those core competencies, those foundational skills that you might need later on in life, regardless of if you start a business. Problem solving is a really good skill to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No matter if you're a team member for a large organization or if you're in a leadership position in the future, those sort of core skills that you take with you are incredibly important to societal and economic growth, mm-hmm, around the world.
Yeah, and in the same conference that I was attending, they they really focused on the fact that we have a lot of knowledge on, like, how to change the world. But what we really severely lack most of the time in all different levels, whether that's like the institution or the government or the funding agencies, is the skills being taught and transferred across individuals. The conference topic was on research impact. So it's like, we have a lot of great scientists out there, but the number of them that have the skills to translate their science into society is what we're lacking, right? And Absolutely. So it sounds very similar just in the business world.
Very much so, yeah. And that's innovation, right? Process of bringing new ideas through to new impact.
Yeah, and we need people like that along the way in order to bring that impact to society. So it's very cool. So you kind of touched a little bit on this about who Pulse is for, but I will ask the question again.
Sure,
who
sure.
is Pulse for?
Yeah, I don't want to be too wishy-washy and say, you know, Pulse is for everyone, because mm-hmm. I understand not everything is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We are mostly focused at post-secondary students mm-hmm. who have new ideas and want to make new implementations.
Okay.
So people who want to solve problems are... We love those people.
Yeah.
We're embedded within the faculties of health, dentistry, and medicine at Dalhousie.
Mm-hmm.
So just by happenstance, we do work with quite a few Dalhousie students. But we also partner with all the universities and NSCC for working across the province with students who want to tackle these challenges, specifically in health innovation.
Mm.
And then we try to drill down a little more on that as well. We're really... Right now, and this always changes depending on the need from local communities around Nova Scotia, but right now we're really focused on aging, biotech, medtech, therapeutics, and social innovation.
Okay.
So those sort of key areas, folks who are interested in solving problems in those sectors are the folks we want to help at the end of the day.
Okay. It's always nice to break it down, not just have like one giant
yes.
health category. You know?
And you know, health is so broad, and I would say... I really applaud all the work that's happening within health mm-hmm. within Nova Scotia right now. But certainly I understand Pulse is not going to completely fix emergency departments.
No.
I understand Pulse is not going to completely fix the physician retention and recruitment mm-hmm. that ails us. So
mm-hmm.
Really trying to build sectors where not only Pulse can provide some level of support,
mm-hmm.
but also where the participants that we're helping can see some success and some mm-hmm. improvement.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a bit of a big task to just assume that the work you're going to do is going to dramatically change the entire world. So I'm really a big fan of micro impact because I think it's a lot more realistic and a lot less
Love
stressful,
that.
You know? It's not.
Yeah.
I don't think I want the weight of the world on my shoulders. It sounds a bit too stressful for me.
For one person, that might be a little much.
Yeah.
That might
yeah.
be a little
and
much.
It seems like Pulse is a big community as well. So it
Very
doesn't
much so.
It doesn't seem like you're putting all the weight on one person.
No. And to that point, point too, I always tell folks who have a new idea or you know want to change something, mm-hmm. is to find the people who are doing the same thing or mm-hmm. interested in the same outcome and result. Mm-hmm. Make them your co-founders, make them your partners, make them your supporters and champions. Mm-hmm. The world can only get much better if we collaborate and work together.
I think that's really true. And I've been in a few research labs so far, and there's a dramatic difference between a community that works together and a community where you do all the work yourself. And I know that in school, a lot of times people hate group work, but when you get a good group,
It's actually fun. All groups are that group where you're doing all the work, yeah. and you've got those three or four people who are sort of phoning it in.
Yeah.
Especially once you're developed or established a career or you're a professional within the industry. Mm. If you're in a particular sector, hopefully you're surrounded by folks who love that, who mm-hmm. love those challenges, mm-hmm. and who want to make actionable change.
Yeah.
So it gets better.
I think there's a difference between somebody doing something for the sake of having it on their CV,
and
somebody doing something because it's what they want to do.
That's right.
Right. So it gets better. Group work gets better, I'm saying. All right. So my next question for you is, why is Pulse important to you?
Yeah. Pulse is important to me, very, very much alluding to what you were talking about earlier about future generations and things like that. I really believe that the future is so ambiguous and ever-evolving, as you know, with things like AI and ChatGPT just in the last few months have completely changed maybe your workflows. They've certainly changed mine. Mm-hmm. They've changed outcomes for universities and rules and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And to meet that ever-evolving need, we need to build very empathetic and skilled individuals to be able to tackle the new challenges that are in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what they are. We have no idea. No one would have predicted the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
No one would have predicted all these things that are happening in technology and how that's evolving and all the new services and products that we have today. But to continue the innovation within those spaces, we do need really strong leaders in those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it almost as that future generation topic we were talking about earlier, almost see it as the job of someone to create those skills, create the curiosity and interest in individuals to be able to take on those big challenges later. So supporting young entrepreneurs and young innovators has always been sort of a life path for me. I was one. I know what it was like. It was very difficult. I remember all the questions I had in that very ambiguous space and how unclear the outcome of what I was working to was.
Mm-hmm.
So helping people sort of develop their toolbox to be able to work in that space is something that's personally important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in sort of a selfish way, is that hopefully I'll be able to benefit from that in the future, where there's some really cool technology that exists and I get to take advantage of that. But I think it's also about societal and economic growth at the end of the day, especially on the East Coast of Canada. We have been particularly disadvantaged in that category. And I see it sort of as a strategic move to support this so that we can get out of our funk a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting outlook on things. I think the unknowing about the future, I must not spend a lot of my time thinking about the future. I'm too worried about what I'm going to eat for my next meal.
Which is fair enough these
not
days,
that I'm
to be honest.
Not that I'm a starving student or anything. I really like food, you know. But it's just, yeah, it is true. You don't know what the problems are that you're going to be solving in the future, or exactly how your product is going to solve problems that don't currently exist.
That's right.
But I think, I'm sure there's a psychology term behind this idea, but I think there's something about the character of people who go into that, because it's similar to research in that you're not chasing like short-term rewards, right? It's something that's like you have an idea and you don't know exactly how it's going to come together in the future. But when you see it happen.
it all makes sense.
Right? And it's an incredibly rewarding process when you get there.
Very much so. And most of the or the biggest piece of advice I do have for young entrepreneurs, young innovators mm-hmm. who are trying something new or they have this idea that they want to bring through to impact, my suggestion to them has always been, don't perfect the end state of it right now. Perfect today.
Okay.
And then worry about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Work on what you know, and then we'll find the areas that you don't.
I'm thinking of a lot of analogies right now in my brain and things that just come to mind when you say that. One is my brother. He's working in the autonomous driving industry. And a lot of his work is very similar in that he's like programming safety features for problems that haven't occurred yet.
It's a
never-ending problem because you can never predict all the things that could go wrong, right? Yeah. And so it reminds me a little bit about that. But it also reminds me a little bit about, it's now coming up twice. If you can't tell, I like rock climbing. But anyways, with rock climbing, it comes with a little bit of creativity because you get a problem that you have to solve, right? And you, like you said, you can perfect today and try again tomorrow. That's like every day in rock climbing.
Yeah.
And unless you're like really good in every project, you just get it right away. But most beginner climbers, they look at a problem and they're like, all right, like, let's see what we can do today. You know,
there's a lot of lines to be drawn there between rock climbing and entrepreneurship as well. When people are new to this space, oftentimes they'll think of entrepreneurship as a step-by-step process that's very defined and delineated, where in fact, if you make a decision, it opens so many doors to make other decisions, and making that decision opens other options, making that decision opens other options, and so on. So it's not this super defined process that makes you a success in terms of business or implementing a new idea. But having the skill set to make the right decisions at the right time is infinitely more important.
See, this is coming up over and over again, actually. We got into this debate, so more rock climbing backstory, with my friend about whether or not you need to progress in it more strength or more skill or technique. And if you ask anyone who rock climbs if you could gain like 50% more strength or more technique, the majority of the people answer more technique. But then I read a Reddit post that told me that you have to think of it like, well, they called it I think an art palette or something, but a toolbox would also work. And it's like strength unlocks the amount of technique that you can do. And then you progress more in strength. And then once you unlock that stage, then you can unlock other technique, right?
That's right, yeah.
But you can't really progress in technique without starting with like your fundamental strength things. Anyways, I'm sure it was more related in my brain when I first thought of it. But it's I've heard that it's the same with creativity and motor skills as well. You can try to be the best at your sport, but in order to get better, you need to get more broad motor skills. And then when you get those broad motor skills, then you can refine it to become more specialized for your sport.
I understand where you're coming from on this.
Yeah.
Because it is true very much in the innovation entrepreneurship space that, you know, if you were 100% skilled in finance, that's going to get you so far. But if you don't have the creativity or the grit and resiliency to do all the other things that come along with developing and running a business, you're going to find yourself stagnated.
Exactly.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. So I think that was a better way of putting it, more related to the actual topic.
I'm sure the Reddit post was good, though.
The Reddit post was much better than what I said. And I sent it to a lot of people, and they're like, that was well worded. I need to go track down that Reddit user, honestly. Yeah. It was very eye-opening. And so now I'm working on strength, although I don't know if that's my limiting factor. But, you know, I think I can think about that in all aspects of my life, in research, if I ever want to get into innovation and entrepreneurship, thinking about like the skills that I have and like how to refine them for the specific things that I'm doing.
Yep.
So it is cool. So Our next question for you is, can you share a health innovation success story that happened in Nova Scotia?
Yeah, of course, of which there have been many. Just to give a little context to this conversation too, health innovation is not entirely new for Nova Scotia, but it is what I would call still emerging, especially in the last few years since the government rolled over based on a healthcare reform platform. There's been a huge amount of investment in health innovation lately, which has certainly spurred sort of this new iteration of companies, businesses, entrepreneurs, and things like that. And there's lots of interesting successes in each of those pieces. Even based out of Dalhousie would be something like Danny Boyd's ABK Biomedical Group, which is developing new new cancer treatment devices and things like that right here in Halifax. They've just raised $30 million for their business to continue doing this.
Wow.
It's like huge, right? Yeah. This is a huge space. But then we also have, you know, Pulse has worked with entrepreneurs who are on the earlier stage of this ideation. One is in pediatric blood testing. And, you know, we helped him through some customer discovery pieces, understanding who this product might be for, what problem it's solving, who might be a buyer or a user of this particular device that he's sort of thought of and ideated and prototyped. And we've brought that company as well through to a $750,000 raise, which is really impactful, not only for the individual, and I think that's how a lot of people think about businesses, is it supports a very small group, but the money that those companies raise also gets spent here, hopefully, in Halifax. It gets spent on prototyping, on talent, on development, and everything in between. Another really cool company who I love, Rafaela, who runs Myomar Molecular.
Yes, I do know.
Developing biomarkers for muscle health. Really interesting product. I've been along with her for most of her journey for the last few years, both on the inside and the outside. And it's been really, I think, engaging to watch sort of the development of that business. And it's women-led and has a huge woman team behind it.
Yeah.
This is awesome. You know, like really fundamental science-based and bringing it through to a consumer market is very difficult. So applaud innovators and entrepreneurs like that.
So one of my colleagues is working in that lab, and we had to do a bunch of different presentations for my classes that I was taking, whether that's just like an overview of your research, a mock proposal, or a 3-minute thesis. And I remember thinking that her project would be like such a good one for the 3-minute thesis. It's just like, it's got like everything that you need from like being able to connect with your audience, having a really impactful product that's going to, well, you know what? I don't want to be like get too ahead of myself, but like I think it's quite revolutionary to be able to have something as simple. So her research, from my understanding, is having urine tests to use as a indicator of sarcopenia, which is muscle loss.
That's right.
And so for those listeners out there who've never experienced sarcopenia, right now there's like, I think, 4 different levels of testing that you have to go through to even get diagnosed with it. But if you've ever been to the doctor, people get urine tests all the time, you know, and I don't know, it's just so cool. I'm really fascinated by the work.
I'm a big proponent of the whole democratizing health movements too. So those new innovations in the what we call B2C, business to consumer market, I think are really cool, and it's a growing space. So I'm happy to see where they go in the future. It's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know. It's like if when someone breaks down like the process of that it takes to get a diagnosis like that, I never knew about it before, and now I'm just like, wow, I'm sure there's so many other areas in health that technology
huge amounts. And now's the time to try. I'd even say to those listeners who might be thinking about the 3-minute thesis or who have done it in the past and things like that, entrepreneurship and innovation is very much about sharing your idea, and it's very much about describing the problem state. And describing your solution, and describing how it helps people.
Yeah.
If you can do those things, you would make a great entrepreneur You would be able to go very far because at an early stage, those are the most important things to nail.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as kids, you're wondering, why do we do math? And this is why, right?
This is why.
To change the world.
It pays off eventually.
It really does. Yeah, I actually...
Take calculus, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I was in high school, I took AP math, so I never had to take it in university. So I haven't done math since grade 12, you know? But the other day, I did calculate the hypotenuse of a triangle.
Oh.
I know.
Wow.
And it was still in there. I also think... I still remember, because somebody taught me a song about, I don't even remember what this is for, but the B squared minus, oh, you know what? I don't even remember it anymore. There's like something, B squared minus AC over a 4. No, you know what? For listeners out there, please text it to me, because I don't remember what I'm even talking about anymore. But yeah, it's...
Math.
Yeah, math. Math. Math is your... future to success, right?
Some respects, not every respect. It has, I think, similar to you, it's been a long time since I've had to break out the calculator or something like that.
Well, I'm actually being a participant in a study that requires me to do mental math. Turns out, my sevens mental math, like multiplication, terrible.
Sevens are hard.
Sevens, eights, hard as well.
Really?
The only ones I'm really good at are 9, because I can use my fingers.
Yep.
And 2 and 5, so, like the easy ones.
10 base, yeah.
Yeah. But it's fine. I you know what? I want to say I did quite well in math. So, and I love calculators. So that's a good technology.
That, yeah. And here's another great, you know, feedback that we might have for those, you know, when we're talking about future generations and things like that. If you were ever in high school and a teacher said, you won't have a calculator everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
The future is now.
Yes. I have one on my person at all times.
All times, yeah.
It also rings and I can talk to people and text people and I can surf the web and I can watch videos on it.
And my calculator now has a voice too.
Yeah, that's right. I can just ask it in voice. I don't have to type it. I don't have to use proper formatting or anything like that.
And I don't think that we're any less smart because of it, too. And I think that's going to be the reality for a lot of things that are coming out these days. I personally have not had a chance to try ChatGPT, and I know that I should at some point. But my brother is a firm believer that it's definitely going to be the future for writing in academia and stuff. And I know all those professors out there, they're like, you know, already nervous about it. But yes, I mean, there are some fallbacks to ChatGPT, but it just came out.
Yes.
You know?
it just came out.
It's new. So
give it a minute.
Yeah.
You know, it's only a few years old.
There's a lot of intelligent people out there who will learn to use it for good.
That's so, right. And my position on this too is when folks talk about, oh, I'm not gonna work in that industry, I don't really have to know about it. Or you know, I'm not working in tech. I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tech is just a tool. Tech underlines every single industry and will continue to grow in every single industry for every single process that happens there. So it's arguably more important that you know it now.
Yeah.
So when it comes later, you're familiar and you have the vernacular to at least research or be more curious about what it is and how it's going to change your future career.
Yes, I 100% agree. And some advice that I've heard from someone recently was, if you're like really against something, try it out so you actually have like personal experience with
it. Yeah.
Right? Like if you're out there slandering something and you've never used it before, like maybe give it a shot so you can actually
You could say that about so much, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't reject everything
just
because you don't understand it.
Exactly. It reminds me of this time that my cousin told me she hated jam. And then I found out like the next day that she's never tried it before. And I was just like, what a strange thing to hate, you know?
Don't you find that's a common occurrence in, you know, elementary school?
Yeah.
I don't like broccoli. Well, you don't eat broccoli.
I know. So. Just the other day I was FaceTiming my nephew who is not even 2 years old yet. And I was showing him my roommate's cat, and my brother at the time, he was like, oh, he doesn't like cats. And I'm like, he's not even two. How do you know that he doesn't like cats? Yeah. But it's fine, you know. It's part of the journey, learning to accept new things.
That's
and
right.
Working with new things.
Yeah. And yeah. If you have that mindset or were raised with that mindset, don't yeah. worry. Pulse is here to help you change.
Exactly.
Pulse is here to help you explore and learn about yeah. new things.
And I actually think that wanting to learn about new things is so beneficial. Like, we all know those stereotypical dads that try to do everything at home, you know, but sometimes I'm like, I wish that was me, because even changing a light bulb is a stressful occurrence for me. But if I could know everything about how cars function and be able to change my own oil, you know, that would be a pretty cool skill, in the same way that I know how to use computers very, very well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And if I wasn't in academia and I learned how to use computers, I could do my finances so much better. There's like so many things that I can use it outside of an academic world.
Yeah.
So.
And I you know, I think that plays into, I mean, such a cliche that was probably, you know, tossed around, especially in something like high school or something like that, if mm-hmm. I think back. But learning how to learn mm-hmm. is honestly so important. Mm-hmm. You don't have to learn how to learn in an academic framework.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how you operate and how you consume information and retain it and yeah. can recall it. So, you know, I'm not saying you have to go to university to be able to do this stuff. But learning how you learn and continuously consuming new information
mm-hmm.
gives you such a broad, diverse perspective on the world mm-hmm. and the problems that we have and solutions of how you might do that, even if it's changing a light bulb or changing your oil
yes.
or anything in between yeah. that and solving big world challenges.
I do think that that is like one of the biggest life lessons that I've just come to love. You know, I learned it probably after second year of my university undergraduate degree.
Very typical.
Yeah, because yeah. in your first, like coming out of high school, first couple of years of my undergrad degree, I was just there to try to memorize everything. Mm-hmm. I had no intent of learning how to learn, you know. I was just there going like, I'm going to memorize every single yep. muscle in the entire
I'm
body.
I'm going to write a crib sheet with exactly. all the math formulas
That's
I need.
Exactly
that B squared
it.
Minus A, B,
yeah, whatever
4,
that square root yeah. of something, whatever it is. Let me tell you, everything that I tried to memorize is no longer in my brain anymore, but the capacity to learn is still with me, and I take it with me in all different areas. And I'm sometimes envious, like, yes, I'm in academia, but if I took my skill to learn at a younger age and went into music and became like a professional musician, oh, so cool. And same if I went into acting or even if I went into construction. I think construction, like, could you imagine just going around and being like, I built that house. Like, that would be so cool. Like,
I could do that.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's so cool. So yeah. I agree with you. It doesn't have to be in academia.
No, not at all. I think that's a great perspective to have to yeah. become a well-rounded person. And I often, you know, I think about this too. I've found myself be able to build a large network mm-hmm. of industry individuals, professionals, support systems, things like that, because I can't talk in depth about everything,
mm-hmm.
but I can certainly talk a little about everything.
Yes.
And, you know, I do everything from, like, I've got dogs, I ride motorcycles, I love art, I love music.
Yes.
Like, all these sort of things are great conversation starters to meet new people and build your professional network as
yeah.
well, which just pays dividends in itself, and then multiply that beyond beyond just network building and mm-hmm. things like that, but to your future career.
Yeah, another lesson that I learned as well along my life. I think that's a really desirable thing to have, is to not be good at one thing, but to be good at a lot of, or not to be, to be okay at a lot of other
that's
things.
Right.
Because, well, firstly, like, maybe one of the first parties I ever went to, you know, I was a very keen student, so I'm sitting there and I'm just like, so, like, biology class, you know? And they're like, no. I am not here to talk to you yeah, about that. And I realized,
right.
you know, I think I should become a bit more well-rounded as a person, and, you know, not let school become my entire identity.
Not at all.
And when you
all.
Do that, like, man, you meet so many more cool people, you know? I think I'm a little bit of a hobbyist at this point. It's like, One thing that I started doing is like just learning one song on an instrument so it can seem like I know how to play an instrument, but it's like, no, I really don't know, you know, but you seem like a very impressive person to a non-expert, you know?
It's true. Just learn those four chords on the guitar and, you know.
And it works in all things. Sports, I played soccer once, you know, and that means I can play soccer, right? So it's, and then you meet a lot of people through it. But in innovation, it's like there's so many other things to dip your toes into. But obviously, if you're going to start a business, like maybe have more than just one song behind. But
it's very true. If you're thinking about starting a business or exploring entrepreneurship and innovation, when I look at folks around me that I want to help and help support, that's a huge component of what I look in. Is not what are they doing today, but it's what are they interested in doing? What have they done? How have they gone about it? How broad is the experience? Not how deep you are in one particular subject.
Yeah, and that's good. That's reassuring for somebody who hasn't taken a deep dive into a lot of things, you know? But I don't know.
I'd say also, you know, for post-secondary students who are looking to move into a career at some point, it's another great thing to build now and highlight later in terms of, you know, being a well-rounded or an interested and curious individual pays dividends for businesses themselves as well. I would always hire someone who's curious and who is a great problem solver and learner versus someone who has one function. Business, right?
Yeah. Also, it's like the worst when you end up stuck at a cocktail party, because I go to a lot of those.
Cocktail party after that one conference.
Exactly. Talking to that one person who only has one interest in their entire life, you know? And I don't know. But at the same time, I think it's super, super cool to be very passionate about something that gives your life meaning. So I'm not trying to take that away from anyone, let me tell you.
You can still be passionate and have other interests.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, today's society is a lot different to our, like, my parents, at least, in that...
You're trying to age me?
You know, I don't know how old you are. You when you were telling me your story, I was like, I aged you maybe 2 years older than me. So we are... I'm way off.
And here we are.
But anyways... my parents' generation was very rewarded by working really hard all the time, right? But now it's like, I think we care a lot more about efficiency and not working.
That's that's an interesting perspective. I would definitely say things in industry have changed.
Yeah.
No one is working 30 years in a company who's new to it.
Yeah.
No one is going into it with that outset in their mind.
Yes.
They're thinking, you know, where does this get me? What is this a stepping stone to? What's the next big thing, big impact that I can have in the world? Because it's not going to be at the same place forever anymore. And employers are starting to learn that, I feel, a little more. I think, you know, tenure is way down from what it used to be in the 70s and 80s. We're hovering something around 2 years, 3 years. I forget the exact figure, but, you know, we're hovering around that for tenure within companies right now. Very low. Lots of turnover. But that means hopefully we're creating a huge amount of curious individuals who want to tackle big things and want to move on to bigger and better things.
I think it's a good thing, because it's always daunted me ever since I was young to choose one path. And I think it's something that daunts a lot of people in academia.
That's a big decision.
It is a big decision. And you know what I wanted to be when I was in grade 10?
Let's hear it.
Famous. It's not even a job. I just wanted to be famous.
That was the outcome you wanted.
And you know what? Now it's probably the bottom of my list. I would really hate to be famous. So it's just like, how, you know, that's, it's too much. It's too much.
I think it goes back to that building the diverse perspectives and things like that. If you don't have all the information or lots of information to be able to make a decision, your decision's not going to really reflect your true needs and wants, right?
Yeah.
Same in industry.
Yeah.
The more you learn, the more you do, the more people you talk to at weird cocktail parties after that one conference, the more you're going to learn and understand about the world and what's out there and the new opportunities that exist to be able to make a better decision about where you want to focus your time and energy today.
Mm-hmm.
And that might change tomorrow, and that's okay.
Yeah, and that's like the basis behind everyone being like, I have to travel right yeah. now, right? yeah. So there's always a reason for everything.
Yeah.
My last sort of big question
oh, big
for you
questions.
Is, can you tell us about the broader ecosystem of entrepreneurship in Nova Scotia?
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. Obviously something I'm super passionate about, having been in this ecosystem for some time now. What I would say, entrepreneurship and innovation is continuously changing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have always said that we're in an iteration of the ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
and it might change later on.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had several in the past. Entrepreneurship and innovation looked very different 500 years ago when we were off the shores fishing and we're taking our fish to Europe. It was different 200 years ago when we were opening coal mines. It was different 100 years ago with forestry, 70 years ago with manufacturing, 30 years ago, you know, with tech emerging mm-hmm. in the 90s, things like that. That was a different ecosystem. 99 to 2000 was an entirely different space with the dot-com boom and everything. But I just for context building and for those who are curious and are interested in innovation and entrepreneurship here on the East Coast of Canada, Atlantic Canada, the current iteration of the ecosystem started in 2011.
Hmm.
So in 2011, there was two companies that sold. There was Radiant 6 and Q1 Labs, and they sold for a combined $1 billion.
Wow.
And that's a big amount mm-hmm. At that time. And it was a time in history when, you know, companies like Facebook, Airbnb, and all the other tech giants
mm-hmm.
were sort of having these large exits and IPOs and being worth billions or tens of billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very large industry. Of course, we looked at that through an economic development lens of like, whoa, $1 billion. Imagine how much that could be in tax revenue that could go back to supporting the societal base here in Atlantic Canada. So that's where the current iteration started.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2011. There is a decision from leadership that we need more of these.
Mm-hmm.
This is really interesting. It's creating high paying jobs, especially in tech at the time. It's creating, you know, a good tax base for us. It's also attracting new companies to the region
mm-hmm.
if we can develop and retain those talented individuals to the space and everything in between. And it's creating new businesses. So that's where we started. And we created what we call these incubators and accelerators. So Pulse is sort of, you know, fitting into this BIA space, business incubator accelerator space.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today, I think we have 56 in Atlantic Canada, 19 in Nova Scotia.
Wow.
Huge amount, all whose purpose is to help people start high growth businesses.
Mm-hmm.
We had this North Star from 2011 on that we wanted more of what we call these unicorns.
Ooh.
Yeah, we have lots of animal names for all sorts of different businesses. Unicorns are $1 billion. We have decacorns, which are $10 billion exits.
I do like that.
Yeah, we have narwhals, which are Canadian unicorns.
See, this entire time I thought I knew what these were, but
it turns out. Gazelles is another one.
Wow.
Which are high growth early stage businesses. Camels is a new one.
Wow.
With inflation so high, there's been a big push to create more camels, you know, trucking through the desert, lasting a longer time, a little more sustainable than high growth. Zebras and everything in between.
Well, I'm not gonna lie, it's not an animal, but when you said incubator, I really did think of like a
little
science
eggs.
Fiction like type story.
Yeah,
so
the Matrix is real now.
I guess you can see the creativity just in your own words that you're using, so it's cool.
We can relate everything to animals, just not penguin poop, you know. Those
no.
are bad. Those are bad companies. We don't want penguin poop companies.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was the North Star of the ecosystem, was to build these unicorns worth $1 billion, contributing to tax base, creating good paying jobs for people on the East Coast, which was, you know, traditionally a depressed area.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2020, we got success.
Woohoo!
We have three unicorns actually in 2020 who exited. The biggest was Verafin in Newfoundland, which sold for $2.4 US, I think, too. So $2.4 billion. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And NASDAQ bought them. We had another one here in Halifax too, Meta Materials. did a reverse acquisition IPO and was worth $1 billion. So really cool, high growth businesses have started. Since that time, the ecosystem has really diversified and diffused itself. We don't really have that singular goal within the ecosystem right now. Mm-hmm. So I've sort of said we're transitioning right now to mm-hmm. whatever ecosystem 3.0 or 4.0 or 5.0, whatever yeah. number we're on. We're transitioning to what that's going to be right now. Mm-hmm. We don't really have that shared collective vision besides just more activity and more businesses and, yeah. and new entrepreneurs.
You mean you can't tell the future?
I cannot. As much as I live in the future, it changes every day.
Yeah.
What I would say is what is popular or what is seen as a good economic investment right now is certainly in artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. machine learning, specifically with the large language models that have come out and training AIs on those. There's lots happening within that space. I was even just reading the other day about one who uses AI to select the best places on Earth mm-hmm. for green energy projects.
Ooh.
So where is the best place to put a nuclear power plant or the best place to put wind and solar mm-hmm. and green hydrogen facilities yeah. and everything in between? They're using satellite data and AI to actually pinpoint where that might be mm-hmm. and where it might have the most economic value for particular groups.
Hmm.
So lots of interesting things happening in that space. And within Atlantic Canada, there's a niche for us to sort of grow and build some of these new companies here, which I think is you know, very important for the livelihood that we have here.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the AI invention or use of AI, I don't know what the right words are, that I thought was really cool, very small. I learned about it in one of my kinesiology classes. It's just how we have IMUs or inertial measurement units in our phones. And so the Apple iPhone, and I'm sure Samsung has come out with a similar...
Whoever uses those, I'm sure they would know.
I'm sure they would know. But a way to measure the acceleration of your phone so that, say you have like an Apple Watch or something, and you go on a solo hike and you fall off the cliff, it will recognize that your acceleration's much faster than it needs to be. And it, as soon as you like hit the ground, it'll call emergency services. And it's just like, really? Like, that's real? I mean, that's cool.
That's a thing that exists.
Yeah, and yeah. it's saved a lot of lives. I mean, you need to know to use it, right? Like, it'd be kind of unfortunate if you're like a mountain biker and every time you go down a hill, it's like calling 911. But, you know, there's instances where it could really save lives, especially if you think about the elderly population. They fall all the time, right? And it's a problem that we're trying to solve. But strap on an Apple Watch and it can measure its acceleration and be like, they have fallen.
Yeah.
We need to call someone.
Dial 911, get some folks there. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very true. We actually, a few months ago, we did a healthy aging innovation challenge
mm-hmm.
there. So a little half program, half experiential learning opportunity for students. And there was so much conversation. We brought in older adults from the community to actually mm-hmm. be part of the teams who are
needed.
Trying to create these
yeah.
solutions.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how much new technology that seniors and older adults are using
mm-hmm.
or are familiar with these days, as well as all the things that they can do that we just haven't untapped their complete potential. That's a great example
yeah.
of one, right?
Yeah, I did help a little bit during COVID with teaching elderly how to use Zoom and stuff, right? So
yep.
they can contact
yep.
their families and stuff. And you best believe you can be in your 90s and learn how to use Zoom,
oh,
right?
Yes.
So
as long as you're curious, right?
Exactly, exactly. They're really great. But we had some orientations on like things that you wouldn't expect you would need to learn that you have to
yep.
learn, right?
Yep.
So it's really cool. Well, before I take up all of your time, We should at some point end our conversation, which I'm sure it could go on forever. In fact, I have a note here that says that you could talk so much about this topic. So.
I honestly, the innovation and entrepreneurship ecosystem is something not only that I'm very passionate about, but I've also sort of devoted quite a bit of my life to.
Mm-hmm.
So when I even when I talk about the next iteration mm-hmm. of the startup ecosystem on Atlantic Canada, those are hugely active conversations that are happening now mm-hmm. where we're pulling in business owners who have done it before, talking about what supports they needed but didn't have, mm-hmm. what they think could be a really interesting shared vision for the ecosystem to work towards next. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I work way too much, and and weirdly I work on sort of building the structures for the future.
Mm-hmm. But you still have time to ride a motorcycle. So.
Still, well, not with this weather this year.
Yeah,
it's been so odd.
If you're not in Halifax, just be thankful because we are at 100% humidity every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and no great. Sun. Yeah. So if the sun really wants to come out anytime soon.
That's right. It's just been hot and muggy for weeks. And yeah. It's been pretty gross.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today's podcast.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Thanks to the listeners too. They make this possible.
Yeah, and, they really do.
You know, hopefully they're going to be sending you some math equations and Reddit posts to review. And
well, my brother is a mathematician and he is an avid listener of this podcast. So he'll text me and be like, "Were you talking about this?" And I'll be like, "Oh,
that's what it was."
That's darn. What it is. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It was so interesting to learn about everything and just all the little themes and lessons to learn from it. I really like that.
There's lots out there and mm-hmm. there's more to come. If you want to find me too, you can find me on LinkedIn. Pulse's website is pulseinnovation.ca. You can reach out there too and see what we're all about. But I'm always happy to give time to students, young innovators, young entrepreneurs, wannabe entrepreneurs, or people who are just generally interested in what this ecosystem is, what it has to offer, and why Atlantic Canada might be the place for them.
Ah, that's so perfect. So you heard it here first, or maybe somewhere else, but hopefully here first. All right, thank you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Up next, we have recommendations with Cassidy Klein.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Get Wrecked with Cass, coming at you with a series of recommendations for shows to watch, songs to listen to, and things to check out this summer in Halifax. My first recommendation to you is to check out some of the local spots for ice cream in Halifax this summer. Some of my favorites, in no particular order, are the Dairy Bar, Dee Dee's, and the Fog Company that is on the Halifax waterfront. I also wanted to give a recommendation for a television show that I have been enjoying recently as well, called The Bear. It is on Disney Plus. It is set in Chicago, and it is about an individual who takes over a family restaurant. Really good, really emotional, intense. It's a quick watch. They're like 23-minute episodes each. Definitely recommend giving that one a watch.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast, Mind the Gap. I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And this was recorded at CKDU.